Thank you. Hello, family. My name is Mario, and I am an addict.
Hi, Mario.
And I'd like to thank Bill and the planning committee for, you know, people always say just taking a risk and asking, but I'd like to thank you for asking me to speak and for inviting me to this lovely spiritual retreat. I've never been to this spiritual retreat before, and it's a beautiful campground, and I see everybody camping out, and I almost wish I would have brought my tent. You know, because let me just cut to the chase on that. No one's ever invited me to come somewhere and do something and then offer to, like, give me a bed to sleep in. Except for maybe the warden, the judge, you know, and I usually didn't want to take that invitation. You know, but what I've learned in this process of recovery is that you have to have some humility and you have to be able to accept gifts. And it took me a long time to be able to accept the gift of recovery. I served on the Tri-State Region Spiritual Retreat for a few years early on in my recovery, and I know what it takes to put on a spiritual retreat and the work that goes in. So if you all could help me just give everyone that had a part in putting the spiritual retreat together a hand, and thank you. Well, I've been told I need to stand close to this thing because there's a device up here, so I'm going to try to stay aware of that, but I may move around some. And you know, Bill asked me, I don't know, it's been a few weeks ago, and there's nothing worse than somebody asking me to speak, giving me some time to think about it. So I tried real hard not to think about coming here and doing this. And Bill is a pretty persistent guy. He's a good program chair because he calls and he reminds you that you have a commitment. And what time and what day, so you can't forget it. And I think the last time he called me, I was actually riding my bicycle. And I was coming at the end of like a 70-mile bike ride. And I didn't say motorcycle, I said bicycle. And we do camp out. We ride and we have our tents and our sleeping bags. And he called me just to remind me that, as a matter of fact, I think he called me twice when I was on my bike. You know, and I'm glad he did that. I'm happy to be here. You know, and like me and my dad, we were supposed to ride up here together. And, you know, he couldn't make it today. And I was a little disappointed because I haven't had any time to bond with my father in a while. We haven't really been connecting lately. We call each other on the phone. You okay? Yeah, I'm all right. You okay? Yeah, I'm all right. Love you. Talk to you later and we go on with life. But my father has been very instrumental in my recovery process because he was my hope shot when I first got clean. And so I was kind of looking forward to that, and I got a little disappointed, Bill. You know, and what happened was a little boy in me that always wanted his father was disappointed again. But I had to get over it real quick and realize that it's not personal. You know, and what happened as soon as I got here, I saw people, a couple people that I didn't know but that knew me. One was Bill's wife that greeted me. Said welcome, said hey, you know, I know you. Then I saw Cheryl, someone that I've been watching for a long time. I just saw her husband Danny. That made me feel good. I saw my cousin. I saw somebody who, God help her, she's still here, but she was a client of mine at the first rehab I ever worked at. And God must be in effect because I know I did nothing to help her be here. But I know the N.A. means never alone. And I saw Tracy here, too. And she broke my back, hugged me like my sponsor, Greg Tuck. And I knew that I wasn't alone and I was amongst family. And like family, what I need to say is that I needed to be here, Bill. You know, I needed this release and I needed to be around this miracle called recovery. Because thank God for life today. I make my meetings, I make my home group. My home group is at Frick Park 12 and 12. It's every Saturday morning. in Pittsburgh at 9 a.m. I try not to miss it because that's my place. That's where I go. That's where I get my juice at. And with life being as such, I'm not able to make a meeting every day like I used to in, say, the first 5-7 years of my recovery. You know, so I really cherish whenever I'm able to be around recovering addicts and go to a meeting. And especially when I'm able to come to a gathering such as this. So how did I get here? I guess it's a good place to start. I have no idea where I'm going with this. I try really hard to stay out of my head and just show up and pray and ask God to do His will. So I come from, born and raised in the Hill District of Pittsburgh. Single mom. My dad was doing his thing. I come to find out later on in life, I know why he wasn't around, because I ended up being just like him, an addict, and he was doing what addicts do, you know, not being responsible, and chasing. And I remember growing up saying, I'll never be like him, until one day I ended up in my first rehab. And I was going to get on the elevator to go down to dinner, and the elevator doors opened up, and this guy walks off, looking real clean, weight on, dressed nice, hair cut, smell good, you know, and it happened to be my father. And he looked at me and he said, what you doing here? And I said, I'm getting ready to go to dinner. What you doing here? Well, I work here. I work in the adolescent unit. I've been clean for 2 years. And like the last time I saw this guy, as far as I can remember, was that he had showed up a few months after I graduated from college. Now, that's a whole story in and of itself. How I managed to graduate from college, I'll never know. But I got out of school, I got a job, I got a little apartment up in the hill, and one day somebody knocks at my door, and this man is standing at my door, and it's my father. Now, he looked absolutely different from how he looked when I saw him in the rehab. This guy was kind of like the guy that I was used to seeing in the street. I'm sure it was summertime, or it was warm out, but he had on a big long coat. And he was grubby, and he was smelly, and his hair wasn't groomed, and he looked gray, and everything was just gray, like a big cloud over him. And he came in, and he said, I need you to take me somewhere. I ended up taking him to a detox, right? And I went back there maybe a couple days later to see if I could find him and see how he was doing. He was gone. And next time I saw him was then. So years had passed. And in between all that time, what had happened to me was that I began to use more and more, basically the progression of my disease. I started using at a young age of 13 years old, experimenting with alcohol, trying marijuana because my cousins were doing it. By the time I got to college, I was snorting coke. By the time I finished college, I was smoking coke. By the time I had my first good-paying job, I was giving my man the money and waiting in the apartment for him to go cop. And next thing I know, I was the guy standing on the corner waiting for you to come through to get your money so I can go cop, so I can break me something off before I give you your stuff. And all in between there was jails, was me relocating, abandoning the woman who's my wife today. Once she got pregnant with our first child, catching a case here in Pittsburgh, running to Georgia, taking some hostages there, only to like commit crimes to get more, end up in a chain gang there, to like run around the country from coast to coast, from LA back to Pittsburgh, only to find out that I had a problem. And I didn't have a clue as to what to do about my problem. And I remember going to this first rehab. It was a process to get there because I was in such deep denial. I thought maybe, well, you know what, maybe I do have a little problem. I mean, it has to be a problem, right, because I'm spending up all the paycheck. I'd rather sleep, you know, up on the set or wherever I cop that versus going home. You know, I wouldn't eat for days at a time. Well, okay, well, maybe you got a point. Maybe there's something wrong. So maybe I'll go get a therapist, and I'll meet with him once a week, and we'll sit and we'll talk, and everything will be cool. long story short, I ended up inpatient. And to cut to that chase, I did about that many rehabs and that many detoxes, and none of it worked. You know, every time I got tired, I'd go see my father and ask him, can he get me into a rehab? Or I'd go to my mother's house and I'd sleep on a couch and I'd soak my feet. My addiction was not glamorous. Mine's was pretty nasty. And just to give you a picture and even maybe a scent of what I was like in active addiction was that whenever I come to my mother's house, I'd have to like strip all my clothes off, put them in a plastic bag and sit them outside until she could get them washed and put my shoes out there. And then she fix me a bucket of water with Clorox bleach in it. And I put my feet in it to soak because they stuck so bad. And then when the funk start coming out of that bucket of water, she get me another bucket of water with some more bleach in it to soak my feet again. It usually took two or three buckets of bleach before the funk stopped coming off of my feet. Now, I don't even know what my body smelled like. But I do know that, like, at some point, I got real tired. I came to the end of my road. And I remember trying to do the things that y'all told me. I start hearing things like, well, if you want what we got, then do what we do. Get in the middle. Get involved in service. Get you a sponsor. So I start trying these things. But I was still hard-headed at it. You know, like, for instance, we know in our region, and I'm not sure up in this area if y'all do it like this or not, but in our area, I'm pretty sure in our region we do this. If you get a key tag, you know, like for a week, you're picking up key tags. Whatever the key tag is, white key tag, you know, orange, yellow, red, blue, you know, you just keep picking up key tags. Well, I was a smart guy, you know, I'm thinking, well, that makes no sense. That's a waste of resources. That's a waste of material. Why I keep on picking up key tags? I'll go to this meet, maybe I'll get one, maybe I won't get one of this one. So even the most minuscule things that you all said do, I couldn't do. I wouldn't do because I was different. And what being different always got me was right back on the set. Now, I shared this just recently, man, and sometimes I get choked up when I say this. And that is, I'm one of them products that keep coming back, even against my will. When I didn't want to come back, I had nowhere else to go. And so when I found myself stuck on stupid and somebody would come and rescue my butt because I could never get off the set on my own, somebody would come rescue me and I would end up back in meetings after I go to rehab and all that type of thing. And I was just believing that I could not get it because it took me a long time to be able to get 30 days. You know, I would do like 21 days in rehab. I'd go to meetings for about a week, and I'd get to about 28 days, and just couldn't get that 30-day key tag. I'd be back out using. One day, I finally got 30 days. Yay! Then I start working on getting 60-day key tags. And it took me a while. Somebody said they had a football field worth of white key tags. I had a football field of white key tags, a football field of orange key, I mean, every color. Because it took me so, you know, I keep using in between, I could never get to the next one. One day I got a red key tag. Man, woo! I went to the clean club because I had arrived. I can hang out now. I went in the clean club and it scared the hell out of me. It was dark. They had, like, looked to me like beer bottles on the table. But there was candles in them. And people out there dancing, I had no social skills. And people were having a good time, they're dancing, and the place scared me. And I remember hitting up against the wall and just sort of sliding all the way around till I got to the exit. And I'm sure people were saying, you see Mario? Where'd Mario go? I was up the hill coughing. You know, where I felt comfortable at, where they understood me. You know, because y'all just didn't understand me, you know, and that's what I did, man. But a miracle happened one day, y'all, and it began like this. One day I don't remember what it was. Maybe it was a 6 month, you know, but I still felt hopeless because I felt like I was just repeating the same old thing over and over again. And somebody, I remember it was Center Avenue Group, I don't remember the person, but somebody stayed up to me and gave me a hope shot. They said, Mario, do you see what's happening? And I said, yeah, I see what's happening. I can't get this, man. I can't stay clean. You know, how many of these damn T-tags I got? They said, no, what's happening is every time you come back, you stay a little longer. You just keep on coming back no matter what. You're going to get this. This is for you, too. And then people start telling me, I met some people from Buffalo, and the one lady said that her grand sponsor is Kathy H. And Kathy and, I can't think of the lady's name right now, but it'll come to me. God bless her. They start telling me things in my ear like, you're one of the special ones. Now, for an addict, I really believe that I was one of the special ones, you know. I didn't know that we were all special, you know. But they used to tell me, you're one of the special ones, Mario. You know, and they would share their stories about relapsing in the revolving door and not being able to get it. Another lady named Jackie and some other folks, and notice I'm saying all the women, because those are the ones I listen to. There was one other cat that used to give me really good hugs at Center Avenue. And she was a beautiful, voluptuous woman. And I loved going to that meeting because she would hug me, and I just knew that she loved me. And when she told me she loved me and held me, oh, I felt that. And I said, well, I'm going to keep coming because I'm going to have that. Kathy still hugs me like that and tells me she loves me, and I ain't got none yet. You know? And if I haven't told y'all yet, my clean date is January 17th of 93. So I'm still coming, and I'm going to keep coming as long as Kathy there. Because who knows? She might be 80 and I might be 79, and maybe I'll get some one day. I don't know. God help me, I'm married today, so I don't do those things. Just for the day. Just for the day. But I kept coming back. And like I remember sitting in on the south side in a place called Sunday Go to Meeting. And I got my 9-month T tag. I had never gotten 9 months before. And let me back up a little bit. I got involved a little bit. Remember I told you I tried to get in the middle. And I start following some guys. I start following my dad. I got involved in the spiritual retreat. I got involved in Start to Live 9 or 10, one of them. And I got on the taping committee. And, man, there was some recovery in that taping committee. I mean, I just felt like there were some powerful people there. And I wanted to be like them. And I felt like I found the place where I belong. And it kept me clean for close to 6 months. And the convention happened, and it was this big grand affair, and I really didn't know how to do a convention. I thought you stayed up all night, went to every meeting that there was, and you didn't eat, didn't sleep, kind of sort of like using crack, you know. Because after a while, that's what it felt like, you know. Well, Mario, how long have you been up? I've been up all night, you know. I can't miss nothing. Running back and forth to every meeting, you know. And, what happened was, when that was over, I remember I borrowed a shirt from a guy, and I was living pretty damn good, as a matter of fact. I had a little job running flowers for a flower shop downtown, getting paid maybe $40 at the end of the day, cash money in my pocket. I was able to buy my own bus pass, able to feed myself. I didn't have to beg people anymore. I managed to get a few. I was staying in a shelter. Had my own room in the shelter. Managed to, like, put a couple things on layaway. Always wanted a leather coat. Had a leather coat in layaway. Had me a few new items in the closet. Got me some money orders. You know, when you don't have a bank account, you buy money orders. That's my savings plan. And I put it in the bank, which was a book, you know, and that stuffed the money orders in there. But I was saving something. Was able to, like, give my kid's mom a little money every now and again. Feeling pretty good about myself, but still had not surrendered totally to what being an addict meant and what being in recovery meant. And I felt a void after the convention was over, almost immediately. I felt the void, and I didn't know how to share about it. I was basically for those 5.5 months acting as if. I was just sort of following, doing whatever y'all do, whatever you said, following the crowd, the meetings all day long, eating. And when that convention happened, it was almost like the culmination of events. You know, the end, it was like the big to-do. And I remember going to 951 Penn Avenue downtown and going all the way downstairs with the shirt, the return to the guy. And down in the basement was, they called it the House of Pain, y'all. And this is where people share that. You know, you share whatever the heck's going on with you. And I remember I must have had a look on my face. We know that look when we see each other. You know, it's that look of desperation, that wide-eyed look like I'm getting ready to go cop. And I gave the guy a shirt, and he looked at, up at me and said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm great." And I walked right up out of there, went and got on the bus, went up the hill, copped, and spent whatever I had in my pocket. And when I came back down, I said, "Okay, it's on now." I went back down to that room I had. I cleaned out the closet, anything that was new, looked new, had a tag or whatever. I returned it to the stores. I took my layaway slip, went and got my money off my leather jacket, cashed in my money orders, put on a brand new red sweatsuit, and my sneakers were pretty clean at the time. And I went up, and I stayed there for, I don't know, maybe 2 months. You know, we lose track of time and space. But I remember this same guy, my dad, came up there, man. And for the first time, I think I saw a look of pain as a result of my actions in somebody's face. He stood and looked, and he just looked like he wanted to cry. And I remember it used to be a time when him and, you know, the NA Rangers would come riding through. I'd be ducking.
Are they going yet?
Man, God, this time, if they ride through, I'd walk up to the car. Y'all got a couple dollars? You know, because I didn't care anymore. You know, but I do remember that look, and it hurt me. I need to say that on January 17th of 93, I got to the end of my road. And I remember coming back to the place that I chose as my home group at that time. This is it, group of Narcotics Anonymous. And I came in there with that same jumpsuit on, with that sweatsuit on, in Tennessee. Everything I had on that day a couple months ago, or whatever day I left in, was still on me, including my underwear. And I came in there, now the sweatsuit, instead of, you know, fitting like my clothes are today, they're just drooping off of me. It's all gray and dingy. Whatever white lettering was on it is hanging off of it. Tennis shoes are all dirty and filthy. I'm 3 shades of gray and stinking like all hell because I was that addict, man. Once I got stuck, I was stuck. It wasn't about go home after a couple days, run, bathe, eat something, you know, and no. Nah. Once at the end of my road, it was the end. And and I came in this place, man, out of sheer desperation, beat to a pulp. I had no more excuses, no more nothing. And at this point, man, I just wanted some help. And I remember coming into this place. Now, you go into this church basement. Now, it's a relatively small basement. But to me that day, it looked as big as this theater here. And it seemed like there was hundreds of people. And all I remember is that it seemed like everybody came and hugged me, with the exception of one person. Y'all know how it is when how you focus on is there's 10,000 people that love you, but you focus on the one that don't speak to you, don't hug you. This one girl happened to be a girl I was seeing before I went out on my run, and she just couldn't come hug me. You know, but I remember coming in there, man, and like, what happened from that point is you all began to love me back to health. And it's been such a sweet love. You know, I came in there. Nobody made me feel bad. They just told me, go get a cup of coffee, sit down, welcome back home. They told my dad, you can stick a fork in him, he's done. Look at him. And, like, I've not found it necessary to use since then. You know, so the recovery side of that, man, what's been really great, man, is how this program and what it has done to me in my life. I'm talking about it has transformed a kid, a little boy, who had no hope, who was just a hurt little boy, who was trying to find answers in drugs, trying to find acceptance in drugs, trying to find meaning and purpose to his life through drugs. to a guy who now has some meaning and some purpose to his life beyond my wildest dreams. You know, and all I did, man, to get this time clean and the life that I had today was that I began to take suggestions. You know, I don't know, this is for the newcomers and for all of us, man. First of all, newcomers, you're the most important person in the meeting. And I think it's always important for me to share my story of where I come from, what happened, and how I got here. Because sometimes, excuse me, with some time, we can just jump right into how I'm living now. And that's not the message for me. The message is that I was hopeless. And like now, I got hope. The message is I was desperate. And now I'm not desperate anymore. The message is that I had no God, and I got a God today. You know, that I'm so full of hope and so full of life and so full of joy that the sky's the limit. And like that all came as a result of practicing this program. And what I mean by practicing the program is that when I finally got beaten, I was ready to surrender. And not only did I surrender to the fact that I'm an addict and that I cannot use drugs successfully, but I also had to surrender to the fact that my life was unmanageable and that I had nothing but evidence to show me how unmanageable my life was. And then I had to even make a third admission for me personally, and that was admit to the fact, and really that's the second step, that I needed a program of recovery to help me in my journey. It wasn't enough for me just to admit that I was powerless over my addiction and that my life was all screwed up, but I needed to admit that I needed to do exactly what you all told me to do. And that took a whole lot of humility, man. It took a lot for a guy, a little boy who thought he was a man, trying to act like a man, to admit that he couldn't manage his own money. To admit that money was a trigger, and every time I got a job and got a paycheck, I used. And that I had to, like, take simple suggestions like, well, maybe this would be a good idea if you found somebody you can trust your money with. You don't need to walk around with money. So I had to, like, go ask my baby sister, would she help me manage my money and do not give me my money, you know? And like I had to get people to help me, to go with me to get my paycheck and go to the bank, go with me to buy a bus pass and things of that nature, man. You know, and what I found out, though, is by taking little small suggestions that I began to, like, get some confidence in myself, that I began to get a string of days clean. I'm going to jump to the back up to where I left off at this Southside meeting. Having 9 months clean, getting the key tag and going to the back of this big meeting. This is a really huge meeting for any of y'all who used to go that Sunday, go to meeting, or some old timers here. And in the back room, there was a discussion. And I remember I went back in this back room and I just started crying like a baby. And I didn't know what I was crying about or what, you know, I'm just boo-hoo and I'm sharing. I don't know what the hell's wrong with me. And, oh, God, what's wrong with me? And finally, a guy who used to be on Heron Avenue with my dad. I used to cross the street when I saw these two guys and go to the other side. They always wanted to bother me. Well, come here, what you doing? I'm like, get away from me. Guy by the name of Courage. And Courage said, Mario, another hope shot. You know what that is? He said, that's gratitude coming out of you. I said, gratitude? Because I never felt grateful for much of anything. I felt grateful if I was standing on the corner looking all pitiful and maybe the dope man just gave me something. I was grateful if I found something on the ground. You know, I was grateful for a good lick, which I never really did licks, you know. Licks sort of did me, you know. And, but he said, that's gratitude. And he kind of talked me through that and let me know that, like, what I'm starting to feel is an awareness. And I'm really actually just starting to feel, period. Feel something. And another guy came up to me and said, you know what you need to do now? You want to know how you can get a year? It's real simple. Do a 90 and 90. Now, it took me a while with my intellectual self to get this. I'm like, well, What you mean doing 90? Well, what's 90-90? Well, three, okay, at the end of 9 months plus 3 months equals what? I was like, oh, okay. And I now had a plan. And I set off, and I did that 90-90. I mean, I just like in the beginning, I'm running the meetings. That's all I want to do is do meetings, man. You know, but I also had to do something else, y'all, in order to, like, stay here. I had to make some hard choices and some sacrifices because I always wanted to go back and fix my life in between my runs. You know, and I fix my life by, if I could get a job and I can get my woman back and she let me in the house and I paid maybe a couple months' bills, my life was fixed. I could wash up, I could put some weight back on, I could eat, you know, and I looked like I was doing okay. You know, but this time, I had nowhere to go, and I chose not to try to go nowhere. I remember one time walking down the street going to a meeting, and my woman rolled up the street, stopped the car, backed up, called me over, put me in the car, just to ride me all the way back up the street to say, "You's a dirty, rotten, you know." And I had, like, you know, 3-4 months clean. I'm thinking I'm doing something. You know, I'm headed to walking to a meeting. You love the hell, you know. And if you want to see your son, I might let him see you over at your mother's house. Maybe. Now get the hell out my car, you. Made me cry. Because I got out the car, my feelings were so hurt. And I looked back up the hill where I would cop at. And I looked down the hill where life was at. And that day I chose life. By God's grace, man. And I walked down there, and I let it be known, man, my damn feelings are hurt. And I am everything that she just said I am. That's what I've been. But I don't want to be that no more. I want to be something better, man. You know, and like, I had to put, y'all taught me that trick about putting stuff on the shelf. You know, forget about what you think life is right now. This is your life. Your life is you go to meetings, you call your sponsor, you work steps, you get involved in service work. Your life is Narcotics Anonymous, because Narcotics Anonymous is going to teach you how to live life. And I had to, like, go ahead and surrender to that. You know, and then y'all said, I remember getting to my third step. And my sponsor was going through something at the time. And I knocked on his door, and step work for me was always a real scary thing. Because step work implied intimacy. It meant that I had to, like, get with another man, first of all, which I never really got with, you know. It was something about, I don't know, whatever. But I never really got with men. So now I had this sponsor guy, and whenever we do step work, he wanted to hold my hand. You know, that really, you know, made me cringe. You know, it's just me and him in his car or in his house, and he wanted to hold my hand. You know, maybe I got the wrong sponsor. Shit. There must be some manly men out there or something, you know. And then we pray and we invite God in. You know, how wussy is that? You know? But we do that. And I say, oh, all right, I want to stay clean. I want to stay clean. Okay. You know? And I remember showing up at his door to do my third step with him. And we go in, and he's going through something. He's like, man, he was always real honest. I'm not feeling real good today. I'm not. Would you mind if we go to my sponsor and do your third step? And my sponsor, God bless him, a guy by the name of Rich. And Rich, after having multiple, I mean, at that time, I think Rich had 20 years clean. And Rich was in the hospital. Suffering from whatever, from, you know, the results of active addiction. And, but we did my third step in his room. And, like, my grand sponsor was the first person, man, to, like, let me know this was my meeting. And, like, I was going to open up this meeting praying to whatever God I believed in and however I wanted to pray, because we're free to have a God of our own understanding. And, like, that shocked the heck out of me. You know, I thought I was, you know, we go open up like we do at meetings or whatever, but he gave me permission. And, like, my third step was as simple as that for me. Like, I was able to, like, communicate and develop a relationship and have a God of my very own. You know, and a sad thing happened out of that too, though. I saw what happens when we don't stay plugged in to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I saw how recovery is a continuous uphill journey. And if we ever stop, you know, I always use the analogy of recovery for me is like walking up a down escalator. If I ever stop moving, I'm going backwards, and I'm headed to relapse. And like my grand sponsor, man, he didn't come out that hospital clean. You know, they gave him that morphine drip, and he kept using it. And ultimately, he started using again, man, and he died as a result of addiction. But from that point on, man, I felt pretty good about what was going on because I now had a foundation, and I felt like I was a member, and I felt like I was recovering in Narcotics Anonymous, the Narcotics Anonymous way. Not Mario's way, not trying to figure out another move. It was like total surrender, man. You know, today, how I'm living today. You know, in our readings it says, you know, we practice these principles in all our affairs. You know, at some point, man, once I went ahead and made the decision to buy in to Narcotics Anonymous, I bought in wholeheartedly. I didn't buy in half-ass or nothing like that. I jumped in because I was desperate and I wanted to recover. And I began to see things. I began to see how it was working in your life. And I began to listen to how you were sharing. And I began to see the things you were doing outside of recovery. And I began to see how you mended a relationship and how you were being a father to your kids and how you were being a mother to your kids and how all these things were happening. And then I began to find out that, like, with my little bit of clean time, I became a hope shot for somebody else. And how this thing just began to work. I found purpose, man. You know, and next thing you know, I became, like, not an NA, I won't say NA Ranger, but I became one of those guys who, you know, is NA or no way. I remember working at that place, and one of the therapists there had to pull me to the side one day because there was a lady in there, you know, well-educated person trying to teach us some new treatment methods and blah, 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 and all that. And I stand up with my great recovering butt, all of maybe 18 months clean, NA all over my chest, you know. That's bull crap that you talking about. You know, the steps say, and she had to say, Mara, there are, you know, other ways besides Narcotics Anonymous. And what she's talking about is treatment, not in a recovery. You know, and you need to open your mind some. And I thought I was a good recovering addict. I'm like, hell, you tell me I need to open my mind, you know. But I'm glad she did that because I carried that with me. And, like, it has set me on a personal and professional journey that I never dreamed possible. These principles, they work. That's all I know. I don't know how or why they work. You know, I got a clue as to why they work. I know that God is in charge. And, like, once I've invited God into my life and I try to, like, through a 11th step, be more obedient to what I understand my God to be and to open myself up to spiritual principles, then things seem to work out for the good, even when I don't think they're going to work out for the good. The lady, who was also sitting in my apartment that day that my father walked through the door all beat up, is the lady I'm married to today. I never would have thought that. I dogged this woman so bad. After we had my son, little Mario, I abandoned her and this baby. I found out that the apple don't fall too far from the tree. I was just like my father. Didn't want responsibility. But somehow, as God would have it, because, I mean, I tried to marry that one. I tried to take that one hostage. I wanted this one to save me. I tried everything I could not to be involved with this one. But somehow, 3 kids later, we're married. And our oldest son, little Mario, just turned 21 years old. And, like, let me just tell y'all, so and this is not to boast or pat myself on the back. This is, I'm talking about surrender right now. How things happened that I had no idea would happen. Let me share the ugly side first. At some point in my recovery, about 8 years clean or whatever, I was a serious hoe. Now, I wouldn't have said that then. I don't know what I would have said, but in retrospect, doing my inventory again, I recognized I was doing some real low-down, dirty stuff in recovery. I was living dirty as hell and probably speaking more than ever back then, sharing my butt off and just dirty as hell. At one point, I had messing with like four women, got three pregnant all at the same time. I was so scared. I never thought that I would get out of that clean. Because I was exposed, and I couldn't hide. I was exposed to me, and I felt like I was exposed to the world, and I just knew that, you know what, I can't deal with this. This is a little too heavy for me. Because they were all talking about having them. You know, I'm used to, like, wiggling out of stuff. And I remember somebody had asked me to share, and I had to, like, get up there and tell the truth about what was going on with me. As God would have it, not Mario, only one of those women ended up going full term and having the baby. And that was my wife. And what I realized at that point was that I had to change. And I had to begin to surrender to God's will for me. And I had to begin to sever ties and begin to let go of things that were not good for me, just like I had to begin the process of letting go of the drugs and begin to let go of my behaviors, my attitudes, and my ideas about who I was and what life was about, and begin to try to do something different. When this baby, her name is Zaina, hopefully I'll get to see her tomorrow as I ask her and her mom to come up. But when she was born, I remember I'm in Carmen, who is my wife now, in their house, putting together the crib. And I look around, we're going to put the crib up in Carmen's room. And the boys had their own rooms. Mario was upstairs, Nick had a room, and Carmen, but they were in a little small townhouse. And I'm like, there's no room in here really for your bed. Where's this crib going to go? And by this point, I've been working steady. You know, I was a productive member of society, right? So, you know, we say, you know, you get a job, you work stuff, you clean up, you can maybe put on a tie, you know, and you can go and you can get a paycheck, you can put the money in the bank, you can pay bills. And I look around and I say, you know, this is fucked up. Excuse my language, but it's fucked up. That's what I'm saying to myself. You need to do something about this. And I had to take my inventory again about was I really practicing these principles in all my affairs? Was I really laying my life down for somebody else to? So we talked real good in here about being there for the still suffering addict. But what about the still suffering person in your family or whatever? You know, because we talk about carrying this message to others. I always interpret that to mean not just other addicts, but others. You know, I see recovery, man, as a light. And what I had to do was make a decision. And I did, because what I needed to do was make a nice step, amends. And it wasn't just about that I'm sorry. It's about, for me, an amends process is about atoning. It's about doing something. I need to be in love. I wasn't in love with nobody. I was in love with my, you know, well, I ain't going to get gross. But that's what I was in love with. You know, and if you had that, you want to give me that, I love you. You know? And so I had to get honest with myself about that and realize, and I had to say something to myself like, what the hell do love got to do with it? Or better yet, why is it always what you want? And so, like, I remember going to this woman and telling her, just admitting to my acknowledgement of all the wrong I had done throughout my past, and that, you know what, God has blessed me to do something a little bit better by you, and if you will forgive me and have me, I'd like to like make us a family. And I want to get you out of here. Let's go buy a home. And her response to me was, well, we do need to get out of here, but I'm not going to do that with you unless you marry me. So that made me take a step back. You know, marriage to me almost sound like jail time, prison. You know, I like to be free. And so I had to think about that. But in the meantime, I began to, like, do what was necessary. God had blessed me to be able to do some other life amends. I cleaned up my credit. You know, the steps, man, discipline, discipline. Pay off people. Pay back people. And the credit got good. Then I was like, I went to an addict to sales real estate, and he's like, man, you can get a house. And we went shopping for a home, and we got a home. And well, it was like she went shopping for a home, and I had to sign my name when she said, this is the one. But it was cool, though. And we did that, and I felt so good about myself. And we still live, and now we're living in this house together as a family. But time is rolling past, and it's getting close to a year that we've been here. She's like, look, I told you that I wanted to be married. And if you don't get married, to hell with this house. We're out of here. And guess what else she was still doing, Tracy, during that year? I'm paying mortgage and life. She still was charging. She still was getting child support out my butt. And I'm like, how can you live in here, I'm providing. She's like, yeah, you know, don't get it twisted. I'm not going to get that cut off till you commit, because I still wasn't committing. You know, I was just still acting as if, acting like we a family, acting like we married, you know. And, like, I had to go ahead and do that, man. But I remember that day that I did it, I felt like a burden was lifted off of me. I felt like all that stuff that I've been really trying to hold on to, even when I say I'm letting go, I'm still holding on, because it's called a reservation. And if you just don't act right this day, well, I'm going to go call so-and-so. Well, you don't do right, I'm going to go down and visit such-and-such. And, like, something happened when I put this, the same thing that happened the first time I ever shared at H&I. I shared at H&I, and, like, when I left out of that H&I, I knew that I could not go back to using again, because it was like burning the bridge to the past. It was like you are now representing something greater than yourself. And so, like, when we exchanged the vows, I put that ring on, it was like burning the bridge to my past. And I got to say, y'all, that it ain't always easy, because sometimes I get that obsession, and, you know, kicks in. I get to thinking that maybe, you know, I ain't had that in a while. Or, man, look at her. She, you know, whatever. And I travel a lot now for my job. Man, I get to go places. I get to do things. And it's not always easy. But I know that I've made a commitment not just to her, but to myself, to my recovery, to the God that I serve. You know, and I'm trying to, like, walk in these principles today. I just remember the things that you all taught me, man. You know, and I just try to live my best according to the spiritual principle. I don't want to be perfect. I never will be. I still blow up. I still get angry. We still argue and fight. I'm still not the parent, the dad I want to be, but I ain't the dad I used to be. I'm not the neglectful guy that I used to be. I care about how people feel. I don't just fly off the handle and put holes in the wall and kick the mirror off your car and all that type of stuff. As a matter of fact, most days I'll take a verbal beating, and I'll just take a verbal beating. And I'll walk out, and if my feelings are hurt, my grandsponsor will tell you this, as we live right around the corner from each other. I don't know how many times in the last 4 years that I've gotten in my car late at night after, you know, because look, I got a program of recovery, she don't. And sometimes I'm still you wasn't fucking, they still ain't living in just again. I get in my car and I ride around with my little feelings hurt, and I'm thinking, where can I go? Where can I go? You know? and I pick up the phone instead of picking up. And when I pick up the phone, I call my sponsor, my grand sponsor, some man, instead of calling some female today. And my grand sponsor usually talks me through, and he shares his wisdom experience. He's been married for 20,000 years or whatever. You know, his woman been with him in active addiction. They still together, and man, he, whatever story I run at him, he done been there, done it. And then he said, okay, you tired yet? I said, yeah, man, I'm just sitting up here in the dark in the car in the corner. Okay, so why don't you go head on home? And then he said, why the hell you leaving anyway? That's your house. Like, yeah, it is. So I put my key and I go back in, you know, now, you know, and then I go get a pillow and I sleep on the couch. But for the most part, there's peace in my house. And like the venom and the anger and the resentment and whatnot that I used to feel coming from my wife, I don't feel that. Now I actually feel love most of the time. You know, and the thing is that we're working together, and I look at our children, I see the benefit in them. I just said my son turned 21 on August 1st, my oldest son, little Mario. And this is a kid that when I would go pick him up trying to act like I was a responsible dad, I'd take him to the crack house with me and sit him in a room on the couch for hours while we running back and forth, peeking out windows, looking out there. You okay? You want something to eat? You know, give him something to drink or eat. You know, the damage that I did to that kid, God only knows. You know, but today, when he had his, we had a cookout for him for his 21st birthday. And we invited family and whatnot. And I, of course, invited some of my recovery friends. I invited my sponsor. Because, you know, my wife's family, you know, they're crazy, man. They still drink and they do all that. So I need y'all to help me sometimes. But I went and bought my son a watch. I bought him a really nice watch. And, you know, they like everything big. So the watch is big. And it hangs off his arm. You know, I'm afraid he's going to lose it. But it ain't about the watch. It's what I put on the back of the watch. And I put on the back of the watch, dot, 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 you can never get it back. Love, Dad. Referring to time. And when I told the man what to put on, when I said love, Dad, that part of me that still don't like the intimacy and that connection and closeness, I said, wait, maybe I should just put Dad. And the man looked at me and said, no, you got it. Put love, Dad. And I gave the boy the watch, man, and he went around showing everybody, and several times he said, Dad, I really like this watch. I think this is the only time I can remember my son actually giving me a hug. You know, and that felt so damn good, y'all. You know, and those are the benefits of recovery. The benefits of recovery are the ability to respond. We call it responsibility. You know, it's the ability to be present, to actually participate in your own life. And honest to God, man, I ain't never had it so good. You know, whether it is at home, whether it's in my recovery, whatever it is, it's just life. And it's all good, man. You know, I get real excited about the day. And even when I'm not so excited, I know there's things I can do to, like, rekindle my fire. You know, Bill goes, I talked about riding bikes. I picked up a hobby. You know, I'm 47 years old now. I don't play basketball, and when I try to jog, my knee hurt real bad. But I found this hobby, man. I found it through my work, and it's bike riding. And so, like, I do things I never thought that I would be a guy who would like to, like, first of all, get on a bike, your butt be hurting and whatnot, and you ride for all these miles. But, you know, camp out like this, you know, I've done rides, man, from Mobile, Alabama, all the way to Owen Sound, Canada. And without a truck carrying our stuff, we put our tents and our sleeping bags and pots and pans all on our bikes. And we pedaling, you know. But there's so much freedom, and it's a hell of a journey. And you meet new people, and it's spiritual. And you camp out, and there's nothing up there but the stars. And you understand, man, what life is really about, you know. It's not always about the hustle and bustle. It's about the simple things, like this. You know, how much more simpler can we get, you know, than this? You know, so I don't know, man, what I've talked about, and I don't know if I got any more to say, but I feel tired. And I think y'all probably tired of listening to me. You know, so I think I'm going to stop basically right there and just say that I love Narcotics Anonymous, man, but I love even more the life that Narcotics Anonymous has afforded me. It's a life worth living. I never knew that before. I thought I wanted to die, but today I don't want to die. I just want to have more of life and what life has to offer me, man. And I want to try to love people and especially love those closest to me as much as possible. I will say this before I close, that here lately, people have been getting sick and people have been dying. My mother called me today and told me of somebody, her first sponsor, a lady that knew me when I was a little boy, that just got diagnosed with cancer. I know another lady that I've known since we've all been on this journey together from day one. She has cancer now. People are leaving. My wife, she's 41. Last year, right after her 40th birthday, she got her first mammogram. They saw something. She got a biopsy. It was positive. She had breast cancer. Thank God it was early in the diagnosis, but it was a thing we had to go through, and she doesn't care about me sharing this, so I'll share it with you all because she wants to be a hope shot to other people as well. And, you know, she had to get, we made the decision to get a mastectomy. You know, she had to have, it was either get a lumpectomy and, like, the risk of it coming back or just remove it. She's like, the hell with that, take it. And I said, take it too. But I remember, y'all, she at one point, a few critical things happened in that process of going through sadness, anger, and then getting to acceptance. At one point, she cried and said she felt like a failure to the kids. And I was like, baby, you're not a failure. You're the greatest mom they ever had. You're the greatest mom there ever was. And it's not your fault you have cancer. Don't feel like that. And then she said, well, I feel like I'm a failure to you. I feel like I'm going to be unattractive to you. And even after she got removed, we went through that. And y'all, I'm going to tell you, man, I never knew I had such love in me. Because I not just told her, but I showed her, baby, it ain't about your breast. It's about you. I love you. They can take your breast and two legs, and I'm still going to be there. And it's got to be God, y'all. Because I'm talking about we went through this process, and we went through it together, and we're still going through it together. She's gotten all the way on the other side, the reconstruction, the whole nine, and I kiss it. I let her know, you know what I'm saying? I let her know, baby, there ain't nothing. I got you. We got each other. And there's nothing that we can't do together. You know, and like we went through that thing as a family, man. You know, and then when I think about what I put her through with my disease, cancer ain't shit. You know, we can do this. So I needed to share that with y'all because it's only through God's grace and mercy and practicing these principles, man, in my life that I've grown to that. You know, I say these things sometimes because I'm amazed. I'm amazed that I've come from being this selfish, self-centered, arrogant, egotistical, all about me, don't give a damn about nobody, all at the same time have the low self-esteem, low self-worth, degrading myself, daring it, to somebody that has the capacity to feel human and to be human and to act like a human being today. So before I close, with that being said, there's a guy who I love that used to say, I haven't heard him say a long time, but he said that compassion and love are idle potentials, and let's share it with another human being. So if you would, just stand up and hug somebody to your left and right and tell them that you'll be there for them. Even in the dark.
I'll be there for you, Phil. That's what he said to say.
I love you all. Thanks for listening on Addict Named Mario. Thank you.